Blog Talk Hello. Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, prisoner advocate and host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have on with us once again J.D. Rutherford, former prisoner, now author and advocate. J.D. will be speaking more about the problems facing people in all communities throughout the country, why he decided to write and publish his books, and how the books can help all of us in coping with and getting beyond the most difficult times in our lives. Let's please welcome J.D. Rutherford once again. J.D., are you on with us?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, J.D., you want to let the audience know a little bit more about yourself for those who weren't on with us last week?
Well, my name is J.D. Rutherford, and I'm the founder of Stand for Something Life Incorporated. It's a nonprofit organization geared towards helping people break free from the shackles of an imprisoned mind and to get them on the right path towards recovery, not only through reentry issues, but maybe substance abuse or any other issue that is causing them great emotional discomfort or a lack of positive cognitions.
Okay, and so what have you done since being out of prison with the books and the other things that you're working on?
Well, I was officially released from the federal prison system on January 12, 2017, released to the halfway house system with basically $38 in the shirt on my back, flip-flop thongs on my feet, didn't even have shoes, had no kind of family support at all whatsoever, and was able to rebuild my life by starting from the very bottom of the totem pole in life itself with a menial job working as a steward in a hotel restaurant washing dishes until I worked my way up to become a line cook. And I was been at that job for about 2.5 years now. And what I have done beginning last week is I officially turned in my resignation notice, and I'm moving on to a bigger and better career and something that's going to benefit me not only financially, but emotionally and physically as well. With the nonprofit organization work that I'm doing, it's kind of taken a halt. Been put on pause in a lot of ways because just a lot of work for one man to do by himself, couldn't really find any help to do it. Self-published 2 books, An Imprisoned Mind, A Guide to Escaping in a Self-Made Prison, and me and my mother published a book together called Dear Mom, Dear Son, Separated by Bars, Not the Heart. Both of them books are available on Amazon.com, and I've just been doing a lot of like one-on-one life coaching and counseling for many mothers and fathers that are impacted by incarceration with their sons and daughters in the system. And I've also taken a lot of steps towards reaching out to many people in the criminal justice reform world to basically bring them a whole new perspective on what the incarceration system really looks like, who it really affects, how we can move forward as far as opening more eyes across the board, and how we can basically cut the prison population down by not just 50, but by 70% with a lot of the ideas that are outlined in the philosophy of the Stand for Something Life initiative.
You've done a lot. You've really done a lot. And I noticed, and for the audience too, you can just go on the internet and just type in J.D. Rutherford in the internet browser or J.D. Rutherford books, and it'll bring everything up to let you know what the book is about and the names of the book, even the picture of J.D. himself. So I encourage everyone to read it, and I intend to buy it myself because I'm really interested in, you know, the things that you have gone through and the success story that, you know, you're speaking of right now. But Stand for Something Life, you want to, you know, kind of like let the audience know exactly where they can help if they wanted to do some, you know, volunteer work with you or whatever they may be able to do to help.
Well, at this point in time, well, what I've done with Stand for Something Life is I need to figure out where it's going to go from here, if it's going to be permanently shelved, or if I'm going to reopen it at a later date. I have to start working on how I'm going to file taxes for it. It'll officially be in existence for one whole year coming in September. I never filed taxes on it back in January or February because I didn't know, you know, I felt that I could probably wait a whole fiscal year before I did anything. There's been $0 coming into it. There's been $0 going out of it. So I can't imagine really much tax issues I'm going to have with it.
There won't be any. And actually, we can talk about that if you want some other time, because there is a form that needs to be filled out. But anything under a certain amount of money, you don't have to pay any taxes at all. And you can actually do it online, the required document. But the book, as we mentioned last time you were on too, your mother has since passed away. But the book, from what I understand, is it helps a lot of people to cope with a lot of the things that they're going through in life. And I'm just wondering, have you gone into any of the community colleges or any of these places to, you know, maybe to speak with the, you know, the students on some of these things, and also to share the information you have in your book?
I haven't taken those steps as of yet. I've been, like I said, I've been in a huge transition phase in my life for the last couple of months. I've had a lot of rocky ups and downs. It's been a tough road that I've been treading thus far. And what has happened along the ways is suffering some loss, setbacks, health issues and stuff. And I felt that I wasn't in the best career choice for my future, for my long-term future and stability and security. So I've been actively looking to pursue a better career that would secure me more financially. And I've run into a lot of roadblocks with a lot of different outlets as far as criminal justice reform is concerned. And what I've basically done is for my peace of mind, I've kind of taken a step back from a lot of the things that I'm doing, and I've focused all my efforts solely on my YouTube channel, Prison Break Raw. And it's basically like an educational, entertaining outlook on my experiences in prison and what different things are, and explaining different terminology and breaking down how the system affects different people. But there's always a positive message in there that helps people to break free from it and to steer clear from the system. But it's been, like I said, I'm in a transition phase. I've just recently set up my life a lot better now, so I'll be able to kind of like regroup my mind and my thinking and go on a whole different direction and hopefully start picking back up where I left off and do things one step at a time.
Can you talk a little bit about the being in prison and what it's like and how it affects you psychologically, how it affects you spiritually? What are some of the things that you can share that you went through in the course of the time that you were incarcerated? And also, how long were you incarcerated?
Well, I started going into the California Department of Corrections in the early 1990s, and that I was in and out of the prison system for well over 20 years. And it ended with my federal sentence that I had. And it ended with me being totally uprooted out of California and placed in a city and state that I've never lived in. The prison system is different. It's like night and day from the state to the feds. Well, at least the federal prison that I was at. California prison system is very brutal. It's very dangerous. It's very political. It's very segregated. Not only is it segregated by administrations, but it's mostly segregated on the inmate population as a whole. I've experienced all kinds of stuff that you couldn't even imagine in that prison system. I took on the role as a self-proclaimed jailhouse attorney back in 1998, and I started studying the law. the application of law, constitutional violations that some of these prisons might have had, and started to learn more about the Constitution in a way that pretty much was, not only was it discouraging, but it was also eye-opening to learn a lot about how the application of the 13th Amendment, the clause in the 13th Amendment that has basically branded you a slave due to your criminal convictions, has kind of like restricted a lot of your constitutional rights. Just to get out there and help, you know, many men file the 602 appeal process to get some kind of relief from the administration and the various specific institutions, also helping some men with a modification of sentence through the writ of habeas corpus process, medical 602s, and I've experienced a lot of retaliation from the staff in my efforts in doing that.
Now, what do you think about the courts, JD, as far as a lot of prisoners who are filing their own lawsuits against the Department of Corrections across the board, when their rights are being denied, their 14th Amendment right and all of these privileges that they are having taken from them, they're filing lawsuits, but a lot of times the judges are going in favor of the Department of Corrections instead of the prisoners, even though they know that the prisoners' rights are being seriously violated. Have you ever seen that happening, or has it ever happened while you were incarcerated with any of the prisoners that you're aware of?
Well, there's a very good, valid and explanation for all that, why that is happening. And a lot of people don't understand this, because a lot of people think that people that are incarcerated actually have constitutional rights. But now, like I mentioned before, when we talk about the 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment basically makes every other constitutional right null and void. And a lot of people don't understand this, and you won't see it written nowhere, and you won't see anybody going on record to admit this, but it's pretty clear cut and dry, and it's not ambiguous at all. The language in the clause of the 13th Amendment that says slavery is prohibited in this country except in the case of a criminal conviction. So what that basically tells you is you're a slave. And as we know, slaves have no rights. You don't really have any constitutional rights. And what I like to tell people is that you could file all of these 8th Amendment and 14th Amendment violations to the court. And what it is a judge doesn't have to see any merit or anything to it. I mean, it could be clear as day that a violation occurred, but it's up to the judge to say, well, you know what, I don't believe your 8th Amendment rights have been violated, and they don't cite the clause in the 13th Amendment, and they probably don't consciously know that that's why they're doing it, but it's pretty well established that people that are incarcerated don't have any constitutional rights whatsoever. I mean, they step on them all the time, and the courts rule in the favor of various different justice departments because of this clause. And I believe that when we start having a more realistic discussion and conversation about this clause, then once that is addressed, constitutional rights will be once again afforded to people that are incarcerated. But people that are incarcerated don't really have any constitutional rights. And I don't really care what anybody tells me, what they try to say to me about it. I have studied this law for over 20 years, and I understand the application, the language, and what it basically says, that you don't have any constitutional rights. Now, there are cases where judges will side in favor of the inmate population, and we've seen one in California. It started out as Plata v. Davis, and it moved on to whatever governor is down the line, Plata v. Schwarzenegger, Plata v. Brown, and now Plata v. Newsom, and that was one judge, Felton Henderson, who basically said that, you know what, I'm gonna side in your favor. But if you were to take that to some other court judge, he might have said no, with the same evidence, the same information that was presented to him, and he could have said, no, I don't see an 8th Amendment violation here. When we start to talk about the clause in the 13th Amendment. We have an open discussion about it. We talk about it realistically and logically. Then we could be able to start to develop a practice of constitutional application for people that are incarcerated.
Now, they have, like, the 14th Amendment, that it states that no state could deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of laws. So that should be a privilege that anyone incarcerated should have, because if they have to stay in prison, then they should be able to have that opportunity to go before the courts when their properties are being taken or they're being denied every provision of any type of thing that they are trying to do, whether it be work or whether it be education or whatever. So when they have their rights to the life, liberty, and property, when they have their 14th Amendment rights taken from them, or not being able to come before the courts with it, isn't that a serious violation? Wouldn't that be a serious violation of any prisoner?
Under normal circumstances of what is considered to be law-abiding, non-criminally convicted members of society, yes. But again, we go back to the clause that basically makes these things null and void. And that's why I do a lot of the things that I do, and I educate people on this, because people need to be made aware of why this happens. I mean, you can have literally video evidence, third-party evidence, witnesses, paperwork, everything to show that there was a violation that had occurred. But again, it goes back to that clause. The judge could just say, well, no, you don't have that right. I don't feel that your rights have been violated. And they leave it open for interpretation through various different other channels and remedies. But it goes back to the question. How can we address this clause in the 13th Amendment that is basically deemed a large portion of this country's population into a lifetime condition of servitude to their criminal record, their background, their criminal convictions? And this is something that originally was established back in the 1800s to rebuild the South after the Civil War by using a loophole into the recent Emancipation Proclamation, and the loophole that was put in there was made so that people could just arrest anybody for anything and force them to work to rebuild the southern states. Now it has become so far evolved in our society that it just basically affects everybody that goes into the system, every race, every skin color, yeah, every religious background. Anybody that has a criminal conviction falls under the clause of the 13th Amendment now. It's not only affecting one race of people. It is now affecting anybody that has a criminal conviction.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I can see where you would run into these roadblocks, too, coming out. Now, you know, I have sent this thing around. We have in Massachusetts a new district attorney, and she's about not putting them in prison for drug-related issues or whatever when she prosecutes, but she's for putting them into some type of rehabilitation centers to try to help them to, you know, to get straighten out their lives without having to go into the prison. Now, somebody responded, and I thought that was good. I think that residential treatment programs is much better than prisons. But somebody responded with prison rehabilitation or jail rehabilitation. And I don't think that's the appropriate way to go either, because it's still connected to the prison, the penal system. What are your thoughts on that, as far as instead of putting these people in prison, putting them in a rehabilitation center? But what are your thoughts about jail rehabilitation versus community rehabilitation facilities? Since you have been,
Right. I think that we need to rethink the whole practice in general. The whole system, as it currently stands, is ineffective in its application. It's basically a waste of taxpayers' money. It's like the tax man is coming to our door. He's emptying out our wallet, and he's taking all our money, and he's throwing it into a big, giant bonfire in the middle of the street, because we pay these taxes as far as public safety is concerned. Prisons are a place where not only do they keep society safe, but they're designed to rehabilitate the offender or the incarcerated in a way that restores them to a previous state of being a productive member of society. The problem with this is you're never fully restored to the person you used to be, because now you have that criminal conviction in your record, and that criminal conviction prevents you from achieving a lot of things that any law-abiding citizen would be able to do. So the way that the system is designed right now, it doesn't do any good. You could put all the rehabilitation you want into a prison. You can tear down the prisons and build therapeutic rehabilitation centers. But the simple fact and the harsh reality of it all is once you re-enter into society, you're faced with all the obstacles and roadblocks that'll prevent you from getting far. You may be able to get a job. There's a lot of companies out there that'll hire formerly incarcerated men and women, but they're few and far between when it comes to an actual well-established security and financial freedom that someone else would. I mean, a lot of these jobs are menial, low-paying jobs that you know, pretty much leaves them dependent towards seeking out assistance as far as food stamps is concerned and other services and programs from nonprofits and the state and local governments themselves. And it just continues to create this huge tax burden on other people. So I believe what the answer to solving that problem is to develop an incentivized rehabilitation system in the prison or in therapeutic communities that are set up like prisons, and job skills, life skills, emotional intelligence, cognitive thinking, all these things are what is actually rehabilitating the incarcerated and transitioning them into society and guaranteeing them employment somewhere with the incentive that if they continue on this path, that their record will be sealed at the court level to where the private sector can no longer access background check information in order to make their decision in hiring. And this could also be extended to where if the formerly incarcerated man or woman continues on this positive direction in life, that their record is automatically expunged or pardoned after 7 years. A complete restoration of all constitutional rights is the only incentive that's going to truly break many free from the destructive path that recidivism has laid before them. Because the harsh reality is once you hit the streets, all the rehabilitation and the prayer circles and meditations and finger painting and everything that they put into place in order to build mind, body, and soul in the prison system is worthless when faced with the harsh reality that you're never going to get a job, you're never going to be able to live in a decent neighborhood, people are always going to judge you, you're going to be ostracized and outcast forever, and you continue to hold this yoke of slavery to your criminal conviction past that stifles your growth and inhibits you from ever achieving anything beyond menial pay and just barely making it check to check.
I think you have a lot of good points there, and I'm really glad that you're able to share some of this with all of us, because there's a lot that we don't know, and unfortunately, we can't get the information going into the prison as the media would be able to if they would go into the prison. But again, too, like you say, people in society have to realize that prisoners make mistakes, but they also have to be able to treat them in a humane way too, as a citizen, because this is where everyone was before going into prison. And as far as your book goes, I really want to bring this up again too, because I know that you have a lot to share in that book, and a lot of it would help a lot of people that are going through or have gone through something similar to what you went through and your mom. So again, I'd like you to just repeat the names of the books. They can be found on Amazon.com or Amazon, and I would encourage everyone to order the book, because I intend to. And so again, it's you want to repeat that, Dear Mom, Dear Son. And what was the other book you mentioned, JD?
So you can go to Amazon.com and you can enter in Dear Mom, Dear Son by Jason J.D. Rutherford and Linda L. Rutherford, and you'll be able to see the book right there. You'll also be able to find An Imprisoned Mind, A Guide to Escaping Our Self-Made Prison by Jason J.D. Rutherford, and both of them are on Amazon. Please feel free to leave a review, because it's the reviews that actually build the exposure of the books themselves, so that more men and women can benefit from these stories and this excellent advice on how to officially beat the recidivism trap that many are put into, because we're talking about a man who is considered to be 99.9% likely to recidivate within the first few months. And I've been out now for well over 2 years, and I haven't even had so much as a parking ticket.
And you know,
so
the thing is,
it's not too
often that people come out and get, you know, reestablished as quick as you have done. And, you know, what you have gone through, and to come out and to put a book together, a couple of books together, you know, to have stand for something, life. And your book, I mean, the reason I want to get it is because of the emotional journey it speaks of between a mother and her incarcerated son. And basically that's too where I am. So I really want to read the book, because I know that your mother's situation, your situation is probably so much like my own. And I want to be able to get some strength from that book. I really do. And I just wish that your mother could have been here to, you know, to see the journey that you're on right now, because you are going to go some places. You will be doing really well, and you've already started that journey.
Thank you very much.
So, we have about 1 minute left, so if you want to, again, let the audience know how they can help. Again, try buying the book, everyone. It's not expensive. It's a very inexpensive book, and it's got a lot of valuable, valuable information. And I know there's a lot of mothers who have loved ones incarcerated, and I know that it would help you in strength as well. So, JD,
yes,
I want to thank you for being on with us.
No problem at all. And like I said, you know, you could reach out to me on Instagram at author_JD Rutherford, Twitter, JD_Rutherford. You could check out my YouTube channel, Prison Break Raw. And you can also find me on Facebook, JD Rutherford. Just basically reach out to me and we'll talk about it. We'll talk about where we can take this direction in the future. A lot of it is basically exposure, reaching out to the media, reaching out to a lot of these personalities that are out there that, if they give me, like I said, they just give me 2 minutes, 2 to 5 minutes on their channel and let me speak my piece, then there's going to be a lot more people that will be interested in understanding how this work is actually the most beneficial direction that we can take in officially closing the books on the recidivism trap that many are stuck in this world.
Thank you, JD. And we will pick up on this next Sunday, same time.
Same time.
And that will be Sunday, next Sunday, August 25th, I believe it is. Let me just double check here. August 25th from 5 to 5:30 p.m. Call in number 657-383-1630. JD will be back on with us to give us some more insight and shed more light on his story. Thank you so much, JD. I really appreciate you joining us. And giving us some feedback on what's going on in your life. Thank you once again.
I appreciate it. And I'll be reaching out to you in a couple days or so to get a little help for this filing these nonprofit things.
Okay. Yeah. It's,
okay.
It's very easy. And we'll talk soon.
Okay. Well, you guys have a great night.
And next Sunday at 5 o'clock, we are now closing down. Thank you so much, JD. Looking forward to next week.